the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. I'm Alex Worley. Welcome to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
So how do you build a tribe and a community and profit from it? Joining us to elaborate on that is our guest, Vincent Dignan. He's the author of Secret Sauce and the founder of Magnific. Vincent, it's a pleasure to have you, brother.
Good to be here.
All right, so answer that question for us. Dumb it down. How do we take a tribe and a community, build it, and then more importantly than that, right, profit from it?
So the common knowledge is give, 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 then take. So it used to be that you could write blog posts and then eventually ask for things. I think the age of the blog is dead. It used to be that you could get traffic from Facebook, Twitter, and Google fairly easily. No one logs into Twitter anymore. It's dying. Facebook is continually nerfing page posts, and Google is harder than ever to get to the top of. So that begs the question, where do your blog posts go? And I really think you should copy and paste your entire blog post as your Facebook status update. Your personal Facebook should be your professional Facebook, into other people's groups where relevant, and create your own community on Facebook. I really think this is the number one opportunity for people building their own tribe right now. So you start by inviting all of your friends that are relevant into the group. And I would do the group with a partner, so you have two people.
Does Facebook not limit group posts? Like, for example, if I have a Facebook fan page for somebody who doesn't know, say I've got 100,000, to keep a simple number, I've got 100,000 likes / followers on my Facebook fan page, not my friend page. And if I post something, Facebook limits it to like 10% of those 100,000 actually are going to see it.
Yeah.
Unless I pay for my followers, which is so stupid. I have to pay for the people that are already following me. But so my question is, do they not do that in a Facebook private group?
No, they nerf you on pages because the whole business model is to get you to pay.
It's to get you to pay for boosting posts, which can be a very effective strategy and tactic if you do it properly. But so that was my question, is they don't do it in a private group, which is the key.
Right now in groups, you can't even pay to boost posts. So there's no way of doing that.
In groups, you can't. But so it is reaching 100% of the audience that happens to be there at the right time.
It reaches a huge chunk of it. Engagement is really good in groups. Plus, with a business page, you post something, what can people really do? They can comment on it, they can like it, share it, that's it. With a community, you do a good post, people start discussing it, then other people do good posts. So if you have good community management, then you can grow that group in the right way, and then it's self-perpetuating.
So should I take my content on my fan page
and
go into a group? So I've got content on a fan page that I'm boosting. Should I go into these 30 private groups that people have invited me into, which have 500,000 people in them across all 30 of them? And should I go in all 30 of those and share my fan page in there so I get more likes, comments, and shares, or at least I get more views that carry over onto the video? If it's great content.
Assuming it's great content, I would copy and paste the text in.
But don't share the video, just copy and paste the text as a separate post?
Yeah, you can put the video in as a new post.
What about comment stacking and view stacking, though, by carrying it over into other communities?
Facebook will nerf you if you're externally linking. I think if you're internally linking.
So I uploaded a video natively into Facebook.
And you can share it to a group.
I uploaded a video natively into my fan page, so it's native, it's not an external link. And then I'm boosting that to a targeted audience. And then because the views carry over, if I share it across 30 communities, I could get an extra 20, 30, 40, 50,000 views that stack on the video. And the likes and the comments won't stack unless they go to the actual video, but the views would stack.
Exactly.
Okay, and if it's good content, you're saying that's a strategy I could copy?
Yeah, but all groups need good content. Okay. And if you're starting at zero, if you had a page, you would have to pay to grow it. Mm. Now, if you invite someone to like your page, they can say yes or no if they even see it. You invite someone into a group, they're in it by default. They have to opt out.
Yeah.
So you and your co-founder both invite 600 people on the first day. You know, 10% or so will opt out straight away. But then that group has 1,000 people in it.
So are these your friends, or are you just straight up inviting?
Start with the friends.
Start with your friends, and then from there, do you just go and start randomly friending people into the groups?
Not necessarily. You can invite people who you aren't friends on Facebook via email one by one. It's a very slow process. But it's more the case of you do giveaways in the group. So we've got an ebook on how to do cold selling on LinkedIn. Invite 15 friends and we will send you it, and then click done. So it grows itself and people only invite in relevant people.
So the groups is a strategy that you've really capitalized on? So is this Facebook group specifically?
So me and my co-founder of the group, Charlie, so he does copy, I do traffic. The group's called Traffic and Copy. It's 3 weeks old, 2,500 people in the group. Every single post has 4 or 5 comments, which is really good for Facebook groups.
Yeah.
And now we have an asset when we roll out our next webinar, our next book. As the admins of the group, we're going to have brilliant page rank in that group. As the admins of the group, you can also send posts via Buffer or Hootsuite. So on a Sunday night, I have all my posts lined up. So I have a super engaged community in the traffic and copy niche. So it's an amazing free tool. People are saying it could even replace a lot of cold calling and cold emailing.
Just having private groups?
Yeah, just having a private group. So there's people like Cult of Copy.
So you're bringing them in with the intention of adding massive value by nurturing the majority of those leads. I forgot the exact scale, but I think it's pretty accurate that 2-3% of people in any target niche are ready to buy whatever you're offering now. Then 17-20% are ready to buy in the next 60-90-120 days. Those are what we have a nurturing funnel for.
Yeah.
And then the other 90% approximately, or actually no, 80% approximately, are ready to buy sometime in the next year.
Yeah.
This is whether it's a car, a house, shoes, whatever, a brand new coat. People are ready to buy in that type of a model. So you want to sell to the 2-3% in your community.
Yeah.
And then you want to also have the community as a whole, which is nurturing the other 80%, right?
So a great model is the Cult of Copy. So brilliant posts on copy, brilliant Facebook group. He makes $300,000 from that. Once a month, he does a webinar, and it's $100 to watch it live, and you can ask questions live. Or if you don't buy it live, it's $200 to buy the webinar afterwards.
I mean, it sounds like you're saying for the content, but also watching how he strategically and elegantly goes through the process of...
Okay. Yeah, so when I think
you're doing it
I'll
from a different
next.
Perspective. Yeah. You paid $99 to infiltrate and be able to model what he's doing.
I saw Tucker Max speak at South by Southwest. His talk was selling information is a dead business model. Because as soon as you do that, all the other consultants can buy your stuff and sell your information.
Yeah.
But there's always, the market's so big, it doesn't
Everybody's going to preach something else, right? Somebody else will say information is the new gold. So somebody's everybody's saying something different, which is why you have to be so weary of where you hear things from. People will come in here and be like, webinars are dead. And then another guy's saying, webinars are the key to my success.
Yeah.
You know? Social media is dead. You know, direct mail's back. And it's like, everyone's saying something. At the end of the day, back to what we're talking about, you need to test.
Yeah,
but I love on the subject right now of building a community, a tribe, and how to profit from it. We're diving in on something that not a lot of people are capitalizing on.
Yeah,
private Facebook groups. I mean,
Slack
odds
groups
are
as well.
Slack groups as well. Yeah. Odds are someone listening right now is on Facebook.
Yeah,
and they have a business or they're aspiring to have a business. They should be joining all these communities. So, what is the practical way for them to actually get into these communities? Do they search it online? Do they search in Facebook? Do they ask for an invitation? Walk us through that.
So, do a Facebook search and then click groups and then join all the groups in your niche with over 800 members. And then click on the admins of those groups because for some reason, admins tend to be in lots of groups. Click on their personal profiles. Most people have their groups public and then you'll find more groups. So you will not find all the groups just by search. You need to go through other people's profiles to get it. And look at your friends who are the most influential. Click on their personal profiles and go into their groups. Okay. And you'll find more that way. My best groups, Coffee with Dan, Entrepreneur Lifestyle, 50,000 members, Cult of Copy.
I'm in like all these groups. People have invited me. I'm literally in like 100 groups and I don't even check. But now I'm going to start capitalizing on this because I just realized I was like, I probably have over 500,000 to 1 million people in groups that I've been invited in and I haven't even capitalized on. So Vincent, I appreciate you, brother, because you're helping me out right now just even interviewing you. Founder of Magnific and author of Secret Sauce, Vincent Dignan is joining us. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're talking about how to build a tribe and a community and more importantly, profit from it. We've gone through some very practical steps. Most importantly, I think the one we've talked about just hammered in is going on Facebook and Slack and creating private groups or getting invited into private groups, putting great content on there, and then, of course, with the intention of building a tribe and a community yourself, and then being able to profit from it by elegantly transferring people over to your landing page, your offer, or things like that. So let's talk about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part we haven't hammered in yet. So on our second half here, what does the process look like? Now I'm in this private community.
Yep.
I've posted some great content, but how do I elegantly and strategically pull people from the community to buying?
Could we anchor it around the launch of something?
Let's do that, because nowadays launches are such a big trend, right? Everybody's like, oh, I'm going to launch my book, I'm going to launch my webinar, my video series. So let's dive into launches.
Okay, so use queuat.com or Matra app. They both have a viral queuing system. If you remember Mailbox, you got into like the queue at 15,000 of place, and if you invited your friends, you go up. So with Matra app or QAT, you, all of your community, you're now going to say, okay, I have a book coming up or my new webinar or whatever it is you're launching. Go to this landing page and sign up, and they put you in 500 of place. To move further up the queue, share this on Facebook, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, invite your friends by email.
So always have a call to action. That's the key.
At the top of the list, you're going to have free consultancy time, free webinars, free free personal blog post will write about your company.
So free value, value, value. Okay.
If they share it with their friends and move further up the queue. And when this way, you get them to do the work of adding their friends in. So you only need a fairly small community to activate into something.
Vincent, it's been a pleasure, brother.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 0707 at checkout. That's harrys.com, code 0707. Enjoy.
You shouldn't have.
Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
Hi, I'm Mark Lack. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. And joining me today is Brian Liu, the chairman and co-founder of LegalZoom. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Mark.
Just people that maybe somehow don't know what LegalZoom is, give us a little background. What is LegalZoom?
So LegalZoom is the modern way to get legal help. You can start corporations, you can get legal documents, you can find a great attorney. That's what LegalZoom's all about.
So when we have people come on the show, a lot of the times I see that they started a business out of a desire and a need to solve a problem in their own life.
Right.
Was this the case for you, or how did you end up coming up with LegalZoom?
Well, you know, it wasn't a need for myself. It was a need for all my friends and family. So when I graduated law school, everybody came out of the woodwork. They were like, Brian, you know, could you help me with X? Could you help me with Y? My dad especially, I mean, my mom had been begging him for years to get a will. And he wouldn't do it because he was a little cheap. I guess I could say that. And he said, wait until Brian graduates from law school. He'll be able to do it for free. So what I realized is that people really needed help with these types of pretty common legal matters that people need help with every day, but they didn't know who to turn to. And even if they could afford, like the rates lawyers are charging $400 an hour, they didn't want to spend that type of money.
What's been the hardest part about starting LegalZoom? There's a lot of things that are difficult when starting any business, but I'm curious, for LegalZoom, what was the hardest part?
Jeez, the hardest part was really convincing people that it was going to be larger than a, you know, nice lifestyle business. Because when we started, I remember making all these pitches to venture capitalists and other investors, and their response was, yeah, that's nice. I mean, maybe you guys can make a good living doing this, but I just don't see how big it can be.
Yeah.
And I was like, really?
So they missed the boat on that.
they actually did, yes.
So what is the key to raising money from your perspective, having been successful at it? Can you disclose how much money you guys have raised?
You know, we...
Can you hint at it?
I can tell you. We raised on our first friends and family round, $333,500.
Wow. You needed that 500, right?
Oh, that 500 came from a good friend. And it was like, you know, he was like, I want to support you. And how desperate we were? We took the 500. That's how desperate we were.
So aside from raising money from friends and family, because I think there's maybe an advantage there, obviously. Mm-hmm. Did you guys ultimately end up raising money from VCs, private equity, anything like that?
We did later. I mean, I saw some other friends who started companies. I mean, this was a while ago. This is ancient history now. But I mean, it was a situation where, you know, anything that had a .com on it, people were getting millions and millions of dollars. We were just a few months late to the game because when we went out and raised, it was like, but it had just begun collapsing. And so we didn't get the millions of dollars. And I think it was actually really good for us because we didn't go out and spend, you know, money on things that weren't important. You know, stupid things. People were throwing in, they were throwing the most lavish parties I've ever imagined. And I had a good time going to them, but I don't think it helped their business any.
Yeah, definitely not. What has been the key to LegalZoom's success? I'm curious. Was it sales, marketing? Was it the culture? Was it you? Was it great partners? What was it?
I think,
was it that $500 you raised in the beginning?
Yeah. I think that the key was for us, we knew that we needed to make something work and we needed to have real revenues immediately. And so we really had a focus on making the business work and making sure that we were helping the consumers from the very start. You know, we started with an area where we knew that we could go and create a successful business. We had visions of how we could expand it in the future. But I think, you know, before creating everything all at once, we kind of went, you know, piecemeal and like step by step and said, okay, let's get this done first. Now let's go to the next step and then let's go to that next step. And that's, I think that really helped us.
Do you think that's practical advice that would work for a lot of people starting their businesses?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because okay. I mean, everybody has these visions of where they want to go. And I think, you know, any good business, you have to have that. That's a vision. But how to get there and structuring it and organizing it, that's, you know, for us, it was based on necessity. We didn't have the money. Yeah. And I'm afraid that if we did raise the money, we would have done what everybody else was telling us, you know, hire 20 people, build it, they'll come. Because that's what people were saying at the time, you know, full page ads in the Wall Street Journal.
So LegalZoom's obviously hit a pinnacle of success right now. I think that I want to say everybody should know what LegalZoom is if they don't, but for the sake of it, LegalZoom's extremely successful. A lot of people know and are using your services, including myself.
Oh, great.
For one of my businesses. But take me back to the beginning. Mm-hmm. When did you make the decision to ultimately become an entrepreneur? Was it right out of college? Did you not go to college? You went to law school, so obviously you did. But you know, when was the light bulb moment? Because most people don't go to law school with the intention of becoming an entrepreneur. That's not the common case. Most people are recovering attorneys.
Okay, I've got to tell you a funny story here, which is, this I don't think I've told anybody.
Lay it down, Brian.
When I was like probably in junior high school, I remember going in Taiwan, I was at this park where there was a fortune teller. And at that time, it was like, okay, God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do in my life? You know, I thought I was going to be a doctor or something. And then the other guy's going, no, you're going to be a business person. I'm like, really? Are you kidding me? And so,
so they knew.
In a weird way, that always stuck in the back of my mind. And so when I was going through law school, one thing I knew is I wasn't going to be a practicing lawyer. I mean, I could see myself, I could see, you know, I knew that was not where the future was going to be. And, you know, I had a real hard time deciding. And at some point I said, boy, you know, let's give this entrepreneurial thing a shot. I kind of like started recognizing that my personality was actually really suited for doing something like that.
So when did the light bulb moment happen? Was it right out of law school? Was it shortly after that?
I think
I always love to know when somebody had their light bulb moment, like, I'm going to do this entrepreneurial thing.
I think that the entrepreneurial bulb probably happened slowly when I was working. And as you know, as you're going through the grind and you're just like, I remember looking at this, you know, I made pretty good salary as an attorney. And I remember looking at what I was able to afford with my salary. It was a car, nice car. And I remember hating that car because it made me a slave to that job. And that's when I'm like, you know what? I've got to break away from that.
Play with me here. We're gonna scrape away all your relationships, your relational capital, your network, your financial capital.
Boy.
All you've got is your wisdom and your brain.
Wow.
You've got a laptop with access to the internet and you've got your favorite at $500. What are you going to do? How are you going to start
Put it on black.
Put it on black.
No, that's a tough one. I'll tell you, I don't know exactly what I would do, but here's a process I would go through. I would first see, well, $500 isn't a lot, you know, but look, I'd look and see, where is there really a big customer need? What's something that's glaring that hasn't been solved? So from there, I try to figure out how would I fit in, knowing, you know, whatever experiences, I don't know anybody, but just using my wisdom, where could I find a solution where I had some sort of advantage over anybody else? Because I don't want to come in like, you know, just another person. You've got to find, I think this is true with anything you do. You've got to find something where you're going to be above, better than the competition and what you're doing. So that's what I would look for, just a great opportunity. And, you know, where can I have some sort of head start compared to other people?
I love that. It's probably one of the best, simplest, concise answers I've heard to that question. When we come back, I'm excited to pick your brain on all the wisdom that you have about business and the strategies and tactics and how to succeed in the business world. So I'm excited when we get back in a second with you, Brian. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Oh my gut. We need to talk about something. Constipation, abdominal pain, and bloating. You tell yourself, it's not that bad. You take laxatives and modify your diet and exercise routine. But thinking about it all the time is frustrating. This doesn't have to define you. If your constipation comes back again and again and you don't know why, then it may be time to seek help. Go to ohmygut.info where you can learn more about your symptoms and get to know your gut. That's ohmygut.info. ohmygut.info.
Staff Sergeant Ryan Pitts of the 173rd Airborne Brigade speaks about what it means to receive the Medal of Honor.
I'm the one that got the recognition because I received the award, but like I know that this isn't mine. I just was trying to follow everybody else around me. You know, all these guys did incredible things. The only reason I'm here, the only reason I have a wife, the only reason I have kids is because those guys gave everything they had that day.
The American Veterans Center protects the legacy and honors the sacrifice of American veterans. To hear more, like us on Facebook.
Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Welcome to the show. Now let's check in with Alex Worley for good reason. She's always got somebody great. Alex?
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars. We're joined today by Adam Bolden. He's a co-owner of Sweat Tailor. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so you have a very interesting story. Started your career on Wall Street from finance to fashion. I love it. Did you know the whole time you wanted to be an entrepreneur?
I think I've always had the entrepreneurial spirit inside of me. If we look back to second, third, and fourth grade, I always wanted a BMX bike, and my parents would not buy me a bike, so I figured I'm going to have to do this on my own. So what I did was I used to go to like a Costco or a BJ's type store and buy an obscene amount of candy, and in the mornings before we get on the bus for school, I would sell all of the candy each morning, save my money, ended up buying my BMX bike. And right then and there, I kind of knew, hey, this could work for me for the rest of my life. So I think I always knew I was an entrepreneur.
I love that. There are so many stories of that you hear, entrepreneurs having lemonade stands or their first business when they were in elementary school. So you're just like that. So how did you get from Wall Street to starting a business? Take me a little bit on that journey.
So working in New York City on Wall Street, I loved it. I really did. And a buddy of mine from college was living in New York City, moved back to Montreal, where he's originally from, to go work in his family business, which is manufacturing apparel. And the company was getting a little bit older and they needed some quote unquote new blood into their company. Some young, fresh, rejuvenated people to help sell and carry on this business. And he flew back from Montreal to New York one time, had dinner with me and sold me on this 5-year plan, how working in his company in 1 year would get me experience, would take 5 years of experience elsewhere. So I thought about it for a minute excuse myself from dinner. The next morning I called him and told him I'd like to fly up to Montreal for the day and meet with his entire team and management, to which he obviously acknowledged. I flew up there the next day. I told my ex-girlfriend at the time that I was meeting with a hedge fund in Connecticut when really I was flying to Montreal. I flew up there, I met with management. Again, I'm working in Wall Street and now I'm talking to people who are in manufacturing. I had no clue what I was getting into, but just being in with these people for about 10 to 15 minutes, I knew this would be a really incredible opportunity. So I decided to pack up my truck, move to Montreal, and I spent from 2006 to 2011 there. I worked in production, I worked in sourcing, I worked in operations, and I worked most especially in sales.
So you really learned the business. And it's amazing how sometimes the best opportunities come from taking a chance and just letting life take you on this ride. And then you must have started to develop this passion and expertise for the fashion world. And then at some point you said, hey, I'm going to do this on my own. Tell me about that.
So as a matter of fact, about year five into my company, I kind of felt like I didn't have enough autonomy because I was pigeonholed into a very specific clothing realm, which was women's wear, which was in the moderate world, which is selling to Kohl's, JCPenney, Sears. And I felt like I could do a little bit more. So I moved back to New York, worked for the company for one more year, and still had the itch to do something else, but I just didn't have the idea yet. So we picked up and moved to California, Los Angeles specifically. I took a job with another company. And with that company, I started driving around town, downtown LA, meeting with different fabric mills and different factories and just getting a general sense of the land. And then about 6 months into Los Angeles, I was looking on Kickstarter, as a matter of fact, and I saw this brand called Sweat Tailor about how they're revolutionizing the sweatpant and the jean. And it turns out two of the guys who started this company were friends of mine from college. So I emailed them just saying, you know, this is something that I can do. If you guys need any kind of advice, I'm more than happy to help you. Turns out they had no clue what they were doing. They needed me. They knew what they were doing, but they didn't have a factory. They didn't have a silhouette. They didn't have fabric. So I helped them source and produce all those three things. And we went to market in April of 2015. Within a month, we bought the first partner out. And within 6 months, we bought the second partner out. And I say we, that's my business partner, who I used to work with back in 2011, 2012. He decided to join me on this this venture, so to speak. And here we are now. We're two owners of Sweat Tailor, and it's been an incredible ride.
Wow, sounds like it. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, joined by Adam Bolden. He is the co-owner of Sweat Tailor. So obviously, all the time, you need to be creative and come up with new ideas. Do you have a process or maybe some good habits that allow you to do that?
We have some good habits and a process. So part of our habits are we read as much as possible in the media applications, mm-hmm. such as Women's Wear Daily, such as California Apparel News, GQ, Esquire, all the fashion outlets.
And so then staying educated and
stay very educated, stay very informed. We also shop a lot of our competitors and see what they're doing. And most importantly, as good as we think we are in designing and merchandising, we're not designers. So we know what we're good at and we know what we're weak at. So we hire a designer every 3 months to do a new capsule collection. And if we feel he or she is strong enough, we would continue on them for another capsule collection, et cetera, et cetera. So we know where we're strong, we know where we're weak, and we always have a good designer by our side.
Yeah, it sounds like you have a very collaborative work environment. What would you say is your leadership style?
Our leadership style is give autonomy and empower our employees to their ability. If you give someone the capacity to succeed and you give them somewhat of a playbook, and you know that they're good and you know that they're confident and they're open about things, they're going to most likely succeed with you.
That takes a willingness to give up a little bit of control though, right?
Well, as an entrepreneur, you know that you're wearing many hats in the workplace, right? Mm-hmm. So you know that you have to be confident in giving up some of those responsibility to those that you are empowering to.
Because you kind of have to.
You have no choice.
You can't do it all.
You can't do it all. It's just not possible.
Now, you're a very unique company, but I'm sure you have some competition. So how do you make sure that Sweat Tailor stands out?
So our competition kind of somewhat delves into our product lines, and that's okay because they don't know what it takes to make a Sweat Tailor pant or a Sweat Tailor shirt. It's all in the production and sourcing process. They can make the same silhouette, but the way we wash, the way we test, the way we dye, the way we finish our products will always stand out against our competition.
So because it's in the details.
It's all in the details. It's all in the process. A little bit of engineering, a little bit of ingenuity, and a little bit of lending expertise to others in terms of the process.
So it sounds like the fabric is one of the key elements.
Fabric is a key element. Fit is a key element. Quality and consistency.
And when it comes to marketing all these unique factors, do you utilize social media a lot, or what's your main marketing tool?
So because we're directly or predominantly online, we do a lot of social media, whether it's Instagram, Twitter. We do a lot of Facebook advertising. We also post a lot on Facebook, so we stay current with what's going on in the current events, for example. So we're trying to build a lifestyle online. Having a social media outlet such as, again, Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook has been extremely instrumental in the development and growth of our business. Without that, we would not be where we are today.
So I know you wear a lot of hats in your business. Do you actually do the posting on social media, or do you outsource that?
It depends. Something like every now and then I'll do a couple of postings here and there, but we outsource almost all of our social media marketing to our marketing agency, again, who has been instrumental in the in development growth of our business.
Because social media is interesting because it seems like it should be easy. I mean, we do it in our personal lives, but to actually make it seem personable and relatable in our business can sometimes be tricky. Do you have a little tip for how to do that?
Stay on brand message, whatever that is, and don't deviate.
So for you guys, that's the comfort but stylish?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I like it.
And don't be afraid to try us out. We always tell our customers that. It can be a little bit daunting as a male consumer trying to purchase something online, especially when it's an item they've never seen, touched, or felt before. So it's really hard to get that conversion. But if you stay on brand message and stay on brand message with imaging, such as Instagram, we have a lot of influencers, we have a lot of brand ambassadors who wear our products, and they can see the different ways a customer can wear the product, it gives them a much more confident feeling to try it on. Not only that, make sure that you are as transparent as possible. And what I mean by transparent is, have a review section for each of your items so customers have the opportunity to buy it, try it on, and then send back their message or their comments to the site, so then it just automatically gets posted, whether it's good or bad.
So do you work at home or do you actually go into an office?
So we don't have a traditional office right now because we're always on the go, whether it's in a fabric mill or in a factory or at the marketing agency or at a PR agency. We tend to work from home. But I know.
How does that work for you? Are you able to stay focused, or do you have a tip to how to stay more focused?
I think it depends on the cosmetic makeup of someone. I have somewhat of a good ability to do it, even though I have a 4-month-old daughter. That can be a little bit tricky. So now I try to be out of the house as much as possible during the workday. And then when I come home, I can focus on like my family. But I would suggest, if it's not for you, I would highly suggest getting an office.
Or a co-working space,
or
just go to Starbucks. Absolutely. And steal their free Wi-Fi. Love it. Okay, so three takeaways that entrepreneurs that are just starting out can take away today.
It goes back to our customers. Embrace rejection. Mm-hmm. Ask why this person said no. They're going to say yes. You just have to figure out why they're saying no initially. And then from there, you can negotiate with them. Listen to all of your customer feedback. All those details will only help strengthen your brand. It will help improve your products and create opportunities for products that you never even knew existed in your product line, if it's a product line that you're doing. And the third thing is, treat your customers like family, and they'll treat you like family, and you'll have a customer for life.
Great, great advice. Adam Bolden, thank you so much from Sweat Tailor. We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.
I'm Pat O'Brien. Now over to Scott Duffy and Alan Taylor with Business Bites as they sit down with the CEO of the Dollar Beard Club, Chris Stoikos.
So, Chris, what are the three biggest mistakes that you've made, and what did you learn from those things?
Mistake number one, not chewing my food. Our stomach doesn't have a set of teeth in it. Our mouth has a set of teeth in it. So when you do the work up here, it digests a lot quicker. We've all gone into a food coma after we eat a big meal and you get tired and you lie down. Doing that on a daily basis literally takes away hours of every single day. which ends up taking away days from your life. Mistake number two, sweating the small stuff. I used to compare prices at gas stations and say, oh, this one's 4 cents less per gallon. That 10 seconds that you spent comparing them could have been spent coming up with a new idea. Mistake number three, not reading consistently. You need to fill yourself with knowledge from books. People put their entire life into a book that takes you 6 to 8 hours to consume. Chew your food, don't sweat the small stuff, read your butt off, and you'll watch those three things make a huge difference in your business.
Hey, I just heard that people at my friend's company got sextortion emails.
Yeah, it's a popular type of spear phishing attack.
Wow, that sounds serious.
It is. Scammers claim to have a compromising video of the victim and threaten to share it with their contact list unless they pay a ransom.
What if they target someone at our company?
We're secured with Barracuda Sentinel. It uses artificial intelligence to block spear phishing attacks, including sextortion emails.
That's a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda, your journey secured.
A new poll says more Americans approve of President Trump than they do the big media. That's why millions are tuning in to Newsmax TV, America's new conservative channel. On Newsmax TV, see Bill O'Reilly, Pat Buchanan, Alan Dershowitz, Mike Reagan, and more. Bill O'Reilly's No Spin News Show is on Newsmax TV. Get it on DirecTV Channel 349, Xfinity 1115, Dish 216, UVerse 1220, Fios 615, and Spectrum. Newsmax TV. Real news for real people.
This is your Tech It Out Minute with Mark Saltzman, brought to you by Asus.
It's like slipping on a pair of prescription glasses for the first time, as everything becomes super crisp and clear. That's what going from 4K to 8K is all about, with Samsung's new TVs. And behind it all is something called quantum dot technology. Scott Cohen from Samsung explains.
So, you know, when we're talking about QLED with Samsung, we are talking about a technology called quantum dot. And the reason Samsung has made these advancements in quantum dot and applied them to our TV has to do with color accuracy and color brightness. So when we think of a Samsung QLED, first and foremost, that's Samsung's flagship line of TVs. That's the best TVs we make. It's based on quantum dot because using the technology of quantum dot, we can get the full color spectrum accurate in any brightness condition.
More info is at Samsung.com.
That was your Tech It Out Minute, brought to you by Asus.
Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Welcome to the show. Let's check in with Mark Lack.
So how can you create content and make it go viral? James Shams is going to help answer that question for us. He's a growth hacker and viral content expert. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. James, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, brother. Tell us how we can make it happen.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. So it's really simple. The best way to start this is by continuing a trend and leveraging a trend. Mm-hmm. So whenever you're trying to come up with a viral campaign, it's always easier to continue a conversation than start a new one.
So there's already a tidal wave, just ride it.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's going to make it easier for a lot of reasons. I mean, ultimately, there's different ways of going viral. If you're going to go viral in terms of press and not like through challenges or things like that, because there's a lot of ways. If you're going to do it through press, you want to look at what's trending right now. So an example is I had one of my clients wanted to get emails of single guys for their dating app. And so I created this fake app called Puppify. And what that app would do is that it would realistically crop pictures of puppies into your pictures so that you can use those on Tinder so that you can get more girls, because girls love pictures of guys with puppies in them. So that app was completely fake, but it had a landing page that made it look legit. And during that time, Tinder was getting just a bunch of press all the time from different Tinder stories and stuff, which is why I did the whole puppy with Tinders, which is why I did the whole put a puppy in your Tinder picture and get more matches thing. And so what happened was I got a bunch of press to write about it by doing that same technique of hitting up people that had recently written about the same sort of topic and getting them to write about it. But this time I did it with a few different techniques. So instead of just hitting tech blogs with the same line as hitting the entertainment blogs and all the other types, I would hit the tech blogs as, this is an amazing new app to help you get laid more. I'd hit up feminist blogs being like, this app sucks, screw this app.
And so you're playing both sides of the coin.
Exactly, every time. And same sort of thing with Card Block as well. I hit up Paris Hilton and all that as like, this guy's a little loser in his room, screw this guy. Mm-hmm. And then I would hit up Tech Insider and stuff being like, he deserves a Nobel Peace Prize. And they write it like that as well. So when you go and research the articles about Card Block and stuff, it will say like, this guy deserves a Nobel Peace Prize or this guy's a loser. And so just going back to the Pubify example, with that, to go viral was really simple, just hitting up those journalists. And what happened was it got a bunch of press, and we ended up getting about 3,000 emails for the cost of the website hosting. Because what happened is when you land, there's a little email sign-up form that says, get it now for free or wait 30 days for it to hit the App Store for $5. And so you can use Virality to get a bunch of emails as well. But ultimately, if you want to go viral, you want to leverage a trend and find a way to hop onto that trend. So with this email stunt campaign, you know, we didn't know where to begin, but we saw that Tinder was getting written about a lot, and we had a client that had a product that matched Tinder, so we found a reason to match that stunt with Tinder in a way that would go viral, positioning it in different ways to different blogs so that they would write about it.
It's fantastic. I've seen another example of helping content go viral. Obviously, riding on the trend is great, and the spinoff of that is there's the guys that make, like, all the crazy food. They'll literally get like 80 pounds of bacon, 80 pounds of, and so they'll make like a bacon grilled cheese sandwich, but it'll be like 80 pounds of bacon, like 100 pounds of cheese. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
I can't think of what it's called right now. If you know the name, say it.
Oh, that's crazy. No, I can't remember. But it's like, he's got a YouTube channel,
they have
right?
a YouTube channel with like billions of views, and they just make the biggest, most ridiculous food ever, and then they actually eat it, and they're drunk the whole time doing it. So that's kind of like a trend, right? Billions of views, people watching that. They post a video, it gets like 10 million views in a day. And then there's the other guy on the other side of the coin who's a health expert, like six-pack abs, my friend Mike Chang. Mm-hmm. And he's also got hundreds of millions, I think billions of views for health training. So two complete counter opposites. But what it was is the unhealthy, gross food going viral. What he did was is he took it and made it the opposite. And he like was making fun of those guys. And instead of drinking alcohol, he was drinking green juice.
Nice.
And was like, I'm all jacked up on the green juice. And then instead of making lots of gross food, he made lots of really healthy food. But it was like 80 pounds of, you know, organic chicken, 80 pounds of salmon. And so it was like he, to grow his business, got like 12 million free views and like $68,000. Those numbers aren't 100% accurate, but I was like, that was what it was pretty close to, like $68,000 in the first day and 12 million views for free, because he made a video. They targeted that video specifically to the audience of people that like the unhealthy food one. And it was like the opposite. And those people that watch the unhealthy food one should probably be healthier. And so just like, I love the fact that you brought up the viral stuff. Growth hacker and viral content expert James Shamsie's in the house joining us right now. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. And we're talking about the simple, practical steps to making your content go viral. We've gone over some great things right now. The number one thing is capitalize on a trend. I love that you brought that up, because that's like the one thing when it comes to things going viral. Trends are already going viral.
Exactly.
Simply find a way, like the creative example I just gave, where you can capitalize on something else that somebody else is doing. Find your own spin-off version of that. Another thing that goes viral is, have you heard of Ty Lopez?
Yeah.
So Ty Lopez is a buddy of mine, and he's the guy that always, you know, hey, I'm here in my garage with the Lamborghini and the Ferrari. But more importantly than that, here's these bookshelves behind me, and I read a book a day. And so lots of people make fun of him for that. He's an amazing guy. A lot of people don't actually know who he is. Mm-hmm. He's an incredible human. He's a big philanthropist and an amazing entrepreneur for the people that really know who he is. But a lot of people make fun of him because they don't really know who he is. Mm-hmm. And anyone that gets billions of views, right? So long story short, people make fun of him by going, hey, I'm here in my garage. And they somehow get a garage with a Lamborghini or a Ferrari. And those videos go viral. Again, just giving another contextual example of capitalize on a trend that's already happening that people know about. And even if you just make a rendition and make it funny, that's sometimes the best thing. Do you have examples like those?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm actually doing a parody of that as well.
The Ty Lopez one?
Yeah.
I think you got the glasses on. I got to just go scruff out a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah, but I'm doing a parody of that to push a new product that I'm launching about how to create better Facebook ads and Facebook pages.
67 steps.
Somewhere like that. And you should definitely hop on trends and use them to your advantage in whatever ways possible. But you also have to realize that a lot of people try and go viral when they don't really understand what that means, and they don't have a net for it.
They don't have a clue.
So I see so many people being like, oh yeah, I got a bunch of views for this. And I'm like, cool, but that's not helping your bottom line.
If you didn't make any money, like I know so many people that have hundreds of thousands, some even have millions of followers, and they're barely making 100 grand. And I'm like, dude, if every person was just worth $1, you should be a millionaire. Like,
it's true.
Somebody says, just James Shamsie guy is pretty cool. I want to learn more about growth hacking. Where can they find you?
JShamsie.com.
There you go. Thanks for coming on the show, brother. I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
This information is given with the understanding that neither the host nor the station is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, business, or other professional advice. Since the details of your situation are unique, you should additionally seek the advice and services of a competent professional.